Charles Woodson, Desmond Howard, Denard Robinson, Timanga Biakabatuka, from Yost to Harbaugh, passed down from generation to generation, Michigan football has stood the test of time. What's that feeling you get when you catch your first glimpse of the big house? When you hear, "And take the field." When you see the team emerge from the tunnel, sprint across the field, and touch that famed M-Go Blue banner. Saturdays in the fall, tailgates with friends and family, favorite players, favorite teams, and unforgettable moments. A lifetime of memories. College football in 2020 may be unique, but it has arrived at the corner of Stadium and Main, which is where you can find Michael Spath and Justin Rowe sharing their analysis, their stories, and their emotions about this year's Wolverine. This is the Stadium and Main podcast, presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.
Welcome to the Stadium and Main podcast. I am Justin Rowe, and I am joined by my co-host, Michael Spath, today. It is November 24th, and we are one day away from the start of the Michigan basketball season. And it's kind of crazy, obviously, with the whole Big Ten thing with football, and now, you know, of course, COVID spikes coming back again. I wasn't sure if we'd actually get to the beginning of the season here, but they actually are going to have a few non-conference games, and we finally got the conference schedule last week. So how you feeling today, Mike? And let's get right into some basketball talk finally.
Well, I'm excited about the basketball season. I would say, I think, you know, when you look at the off season that Juwan Howard had, you know, it was a roller coaster, right? They missed out on Josh Christopher. They had the commitment who ultimately decided to go play in Australia or the G League or wherever he ended up going. And so that was disappointing. And then, you know, you had a player, Max Bielefeldt, not Max Bielefeldt. Who was the young man who transferred, the guard?
David DeJulius.
DeJulius transferred, then somebody else transferred, right? There were a couple of guys who left.
Castleton.
Colin Castleton left. I'm still thinking of a kid who was a freshman last year who was a guard. Man, that's just like how crazy it is that there's that many moving pieces in an off season. But they picked up Mike Smith. They picked up Shaunday Brown from Wake Forest. For a moment, they had Noel Eastern as an incoming transfer. So this is just, you know, the up and down roller coaster of emotions that is college basketball nowadays. But at the end of the day, I thought that Michigan came out better than it looked like at a certain point they were going to. I like the potential of Shaunday Brown on this team. I like Mike Smith as a scoring point guard, which they really haven't had the last few years with Xavier Simpson. I'm really excited about this group. I'm really excited about Juwan Howard and the future that he brings. He signed a couple of five stars in his most recent class, number one ranked class in 2021. You know, there's just a lot to be hyped about when it comes to Michigan basketball. And so, Justin, let me ask you, last year, the way that it finished, the year got interrupted because COVID took out March Madness. So we didn't really get to see what Juwan Howard was capable of at the end. I mean, chances are, you know, they were going to make the NCAA tournament. Now you look at this season, they lose Xavier Simpson, they lose John Teske. Like, what are your expectations for Juwan Howard in year two of his tenure?
It was Cole Bajema, first of all, was the
Cole Bajema. Thank you. Cole Bajema. Okay.
Yep. So they did have three transfers out, David DeJulius, Colin Castleton, and Cole Bajema. And I believe all three of those guys are actually eligible this year. DeJulius is at Cincinnati, Castleton is at Florida, and Bajema is at Washington. So all solid D1 programs. So it's not like those guys were, you know, anything to blink an eye at. But yeah, as far as Juwan Howard in year two here, it's hard because we've all been so hyped about Michigan football, and obviously hopes have been crushed on that in those terms. But my expectations are pretty high as far as Michigan basketball. I think that they are underrated. People are slating them as a probably fifth in the Big Ten type of team, middle of the pack. But I just don't see why that is. I know that the Big Ten is very deep, and I think that as far as just looking at the Big Ten in general, they're going to beat up on each other like they usually do in the best team. You know, the Big Ten champ for the regular season will probably have four or five losses at least. But as far as Juwan Howard, you look at what they return. I believe they return over 50% of their scoring. And then they add, like you said, Shaundi Brown and Mike Smith. Mike Smith averaged, I think, almost 25 points a game. Obviously, he was not at a Big Ten level program in Columbia. But still, he's a scorer, which Michigan hasn't had a true scoring point guard in quite some time, just because Xavier Simpson was not really a shooter. But adding Shaundi Brown, I think that Shaundi Brown is going to be the X factor for this team in 2020. He is unbelievable on defense, and I think he's just a big dude that can score, that can get to the rim, and it seems like he can shoot the three as well. So if he can do all that, obviously that makes him a pretty big threat. But when you look at what they bring back here in Franz Wagner and Isaiah Livers, both are going to be probably Big Ten Player of the Year candidates, maybe not that high, but they could be. And so I think when you bring those back, I think it's the X factors of maybe Shaundi Brown, the point guard position between Mike Smith and Eli Brooks, and then if it's Austin Davis or Hunter Dickinson at the five. So when to answer your question, I don't see why this team shouldn't be competing for a Big Ten championship this year. I do think, you know, it's kind of crazy to think about, okay, how could Juwan Howard be a disappointment even in his second year as a head coach at not only at Michigan, but in his life. But I think if they're not competing for a Big Ten championship this year with the level of talent that they have, that would be a little disappointing. Do you agree, or do you think we should level those expectations a little bit?
I don't agree that if they don't compete for a Big Ten title, I guess the word compete for a Big Ten title is very open-ended, right? Because, you know, for the Detroit Lions this year, all that Sheila Ford said last year is that they had to compete for a playoff spot in 2020. And right now, after the debacle loss against Carolina Panthers, they're still competing for a playoff spot. So, you know, what is competing for the Big Ten? Does it mean, for me, when I say something like that, it means going into the final four games of the Big Ten season with a chance that if you win all four or you go 3-1, you win the Big Ten title. It doesn't mean that, you know, on the final day, you've got a chance to win it. You know, because I think, and on the flip side, it doesn't mean that with a month to go in the season, you're four games out or five games out, you have a chance to win it. Like, there's got to be some type of happy medium. You're close at the end is how I feel about competing for the Big Ten title. And I think they're going to be capable of that. I'd be surprised if they're more than two or three games out going into the final few weeks of the regular season. And certainly with COVID, you don't know how, like, games will be disrupted and interrupted. But when I look at this team, Justin, you said, like, chance to compete for a Big Ten title. For me, three things have to happen for them to be able to compete for a Big Ten title. Number one, right at the point guard spot, Mike Smith, Zeb Jackson, Eli Brooks. However they shake this out, whether or not Eli Brooks and Zeb Jackson are more at the two than the one, you know, or they do get more minutes at the one. However it shakes out, you've got to have someone that can score the basketball and that can you know, make the guys around them better. I think in Eli Brooks, you have someone who is close to being an elite defender in the Big Ten. You know, there were times last year, I mean, he was the guy who shut down Cassius Winston in the second Michigan-Michigan State matchup. It wasn't Xavier Simpson anymore. It was Eli Brooks. So I look at Eli Brooks as someone who's critically important to this team. And if that number one position really solidifies it, and that's not a weakness for Michigan, okay, that gets you closer to the Big Ten title. The second thing that's got to happen is Isaiah Livers has got to have a healthy year. He's got to have a healthy year, and he's got to look more like you know, what was it, the sophomore year, Isaiah Livers, a really good three-point shooter, a guy that could defend a lot of different positions. He could defend the two if he needed to, defended the three, defended the four. He just got to stay healthy because he just does so many things on the floor. Now, bringing in Shaunday Brown kind of mitigates a little bit of if Isaiah Livers gets banged up again, now you've got Shaunday Brown. You didn't have that last year with when he was out, and so that helps. But certainly, you get a healthy Isaiah Livers and you have a solid point guard position, you're getting real close. Number three, Franz Wagner, to me, if he can shoot the three-pointer, the sky is so high for him, because we saw towards the end of last season, A, he became a really good defensive rebounder, and B, he figured out that even though he's not the fastest, he has such a long stride, and he surprises the people who defend him, that he could get to the basket at will, and I don't think that's going to go away. So if he can hit some outside shots, if he can be more consistent, somewhere in the, you know, somewhere between like 38 and 42% three-pointers, I think there's just no stopping this team, because I have enough confidence in the Austin Davis, Hunter Dickinson down low. Plus, the game is not played at the five position anymore, with the exception of Luka Garza from Iowa. So I'm really confident that that four and five position is going to be fine defensively. It's just a matter of whether they shoot better than they did last year, and the point guard is really solid.
And you know what? Actually, in Franz's last eight games last season, he did shoot 38%. So he did figure it out a little bit. And I also saw some pictures floating around of his transformation from when he got onto campus last year and what he is now. And he looks a lot stronger. So if he's a more complete player, can stretch it out to the three-point line, and then, like you said, get to the bucket and even body up some guys, especially on the defensive level too, because I thought he – between him and Mo, let's talk about that, he is a much better defender. So I thought he was really, really good on defense last year. So that could be a big thing. If he, I think he averages, you know, close to 20 points this year, they're going to be really good. And then one thing for me that I am really interested to see from Juwan Howard is just his in-game coaching. Yes, we now know that he is an elite recruiter. He's obviously got the number one class in 2021 in just his first real recruiting class here. So he's pretty dang good. But I want to see him in game really step it up. I thought there were times that he struggled with his rotation last year. He definitely has a different rotation than John Beilein. John Beilein only gave – seven guys any real minutes in any given 12 of the 12 years that he was here. Never did he even go to an eighth guy really until final seconds of a game. But Juwan Howard last year, the seventh guy, Brandon Johns, averaged 19 and a half minutes per game. That's, you know, almost half the game. So and then Austin Davis was the eighth guy at 10.7 minutes per game. So he goes a lot deeper. He goes to that eighth guy, ninth guy. I would like to see him maybe not give those bottom guys as much of a chance, especially if the top five or six are rolling. And, you know, obviously if guys need a breather, you get them a breather. But I thought that he kind of just really went to his bench a little too often. And then there were times where I think he struggled just in play calling. Sometimes with his offense that he runs, obviously it's a lot different than Beilein. Again, it's more of a run and gun type offense than a set half court offense like Beilein had. But it'll be interesting. I think that it'll help with either Eli or Mike Smith at the point to give some actual offense from the point guard position instead of just driving hook shots or driving pass or whatever you want to call it. But it'll be interesting to see how his scheme works, especially with all the talent that he has. Is there anything else that you're looking forward to seeing here from this basketball team on the coaching side or the player side?
Yeah, I mean, just play some basketball. I'm excited to see. Hopefully the fact that they get a majority of these games in. You know, it's interesting you're talking about the coaching side, because I actually do agree with you. There were quite a few times last year where I took issue with some of his, you know, late game, in-game strategy. And, you know, you mentioned that he went to his bench, that he had a deep bench. He did have a deep bench, but I actually didn't think that he made a strong enough commitment to them. I mean, it took it took too long for Brandon Johns to get his opportunity. And David DeJulius, you know, kind of what he did with David DeJulius, where he never really got much of an opportunity. He had a quick hook, or they didn't really develop him as a potential scorer. You know, I thought he was a little too loyal to Xavier Simpson. I thought he was a little too loyal to John Teske last year. And I think both of those came back to hurt him, especially when he came to Teske. Teske, for whatever reason, if Austin Davis is the success story of the Juwan Howard first year, John Teske is a little bit of the opposite end. Lost some confidence, wasn't a good three-point shooter, shouldn't have been taking those three-pointers as often as he did. Went backtracked a little bit, became too much finesse, and then he had a lot of defensive problems. I mean, he was getting abused defensively last year. So there was some good, there was some bad of the first year of Juwan Howard. Now that I think he's a little more confident himself, he's got his system in place. He's got his assistants that are really good, sounding boards for him. He's got a scoring point guard. He's got a lot of talent at the wing position. I'm excited to see what a true Juwan Howard offense and defense look like here. But no, it's going to be interesting. The freshman class always intrigues me. Hunter Dickinson, obviously, someone that they're expecting to play a lot. Zeb Jackson, have heard some good things about in terms of his ability to make some flash plays. But you know, does he have consistency in his game? And then Juwan's son, Jace and Terrence Williams are not expected to play major roles this year, and hopefully not. I mean, hopefully those guys can just develop behind the scenes. They don't need a lot of attention right now. So, it should be a lot of fun this year. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward again to the future that Juwan Howard has set up, and it starts Wednesday. I was going to say Wednesday night, but it starts Wednesday 4 p.m. against Bowling Green. I believe the game is on ESPN2. And so that should be a lot of fun theater. Good weekend of Michigan sports. You got the basketball game on both Wednesday and Sunday next week. You got some Michigan hockey after Thanksgiving that they're playing outstanding. I think they're up to number 3 and number 4 in the two polls, 4-0. A couple of young freshmen, Thomas Bordalo and Kent Johnson, have looked outstanding. Strauss Mann and Nett. Last year, he was one of the top 5 goalies in college hockey, and he's come back, and he might be the number 1 goalie in college hockey right now, which is great to see for the Wolverines. So, they've got Notre Dame this weekend, I believe, and the games are on PTN Plus, maybe. And so, good opportunity to check those out. But, Justin, and then you've got the football game, coming up on Saturday. Let's take a little break, and then we'll talk about this football team, this quarterback position, some of the developments from last weekend, as we've now had a couple of days to digest that. Justin, Thanksgiving right around the corner. It's a great opportunity as we, Black Friday is coming up to shop local, to help our local businesses. We've got a couple of sponsors and so many businesses that I've worked with in the past. Our friends at Wolverine State Brewing Company, Weber's Hotel and Restaurant in Ann Arbor, the M Den. I know that you're close with the M Den folks. Great holiday gifts for family and friends to check out their collection at mden.com. Lewis Jewelers, where Ann Arbor gets engaged. I just saw that they had an Instagram post just the other day for products that you can, jewelry and stuff that you can buy that's not going to break your bank. So a lot of great businesses locally to support, our sponsors, Wolverine, Weber's Hotel, Lewis Jewelers, and where I work, Kapnick Insurance Group. And, also a good time right now to take a look, make sure that you've got, as you're getting ready for a new year, you've got yourself situated, with the right coverage, with the right price, for your home, auto. If you own a business, make sure that you're covered properly for your commercial, for your property and your casualty, your liability insurance. And so you can reach out to me at mspath@kapnick.com or go to kapnick.com for more information. I just really want to see our businesses, Justin, make it through the holidays, make it through the end of 2020. It's been such a difficult year for everybody when it comes to 2020. And I just want to see everybody come out the other end, because so many people have put blood, sweat, tears into these businesses for 5, 10, 20, in the case of Weber, 75 years, and you want to make sure that they're there once COVID has been defeated here.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, so should we talk a little football? Penn State 0-5. I'm sure the heat is up on James Franklin. This is not the game, Justin, that we were expecting. I mean, I remember looking at this. We kind of talked about preseason. You know, how do they perform against Wisconsin? How they perform against Penn State? How they perform against Ohio State is going to dictate what type of season they have. Well, that's not really how it came out to be. It's how they perform against Michigan State, how they perform against Indiana, how they perform against Rutgers determines their season. But, you know, where are you at right now? I mean, it's Tuesday. It's Thanksgiving week. You know, it's usually one of the best weeks of football of the year. You got a lot of games on Friday. Ohio State game is usually this weekend. Instead, it's the Penn State game. But where's your head at right now, you know, a couple of days after the Rutgers game, looking at this matchup in a couple of days?
You know, Mike, it does feel good that it is Thanksgiving weekend and Michigan has a chance to win a football game, first and foremost. That hasn't been the case for quite some time now, with Michigan always playing Ohio State. But yeah, when you're looking at the rest of the season here, obviously you have 0-5 Penn State coming up, and then and honestly, I think this game, Penn State's coming into this game thinking this could be the one, right? This could be the one. This team is not that good. We can expose them the same way that a lot of other teams have exposed them all year. So I think that when you're looking at Michigan's the season as a whole, I think Michigan's got to look at trying to be 4-4. That's it. You try and beat Penn State. Obviously, you're not going to do well against Ohio State, but then you also hope that Maryland's okay after this weekend and you can beat them too. So I think that if you're riding, well, that would be a 3-game win streak going into Ohio State, right? So that would be a good thing to build on. Obviously, I don't think that the Ohio State game is going to go in any favor of the Wolverines. But I think that just in terms of now what we want to see, we saw a switch at quarterback and we saw Hassan Haskins become the number one back. Build on those things. You heard Cade McNamara say it in the locker room after the game. Let's build on this. Let's build on this. They've talked about this in the press conferences this week as well. So you finally have something to build on. And so do that. Go ahead and make sure that every single person at every position on the offense at least is progressing. At the offensive line position, get these guys ready for 2021 and really build on a run game that was successful in the second half against Rutgers, and then build on your passing game with Cade McNamara, because it seems like a completely different offense. When you look at the defensive side of the ball, you're giving up 387 yards to Rutgers. I don't know if there's a whole lot to build on. There were definitely, like we said earlier this year, some younger guys that hadn't gotten in and made a little splash. So I think you just have to keep getting guys reps and experience for 2021. I do have a question for you here about last week's game and then pertaining to the rest of the season. Do you think that on the offensive side of the ball, was that actual progression? Obviously, Cade came in and was a lot better than Joe Milton has been in the past. But as a whole for the offense, was that a step forward, or was it they played Rutgers and it made them look better than they actually were?
No, I think it was a step forward. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, they didn't look that good offensively against Michigan State. And, you know, that was a Rutgers team that that beat Michigan State. So, you know, I don't ever, unless you're playing Delaware State, which Michigan did in 2009, maybe under Rich Rod, you're playing some FCS foe that has no business being on the field with you. I look at every game as an opportunity to improve yourself. And sure, if they're playing Bowling Green, again, maybe something else. But against Rutgers, where they were at offensively with their confidence, with their execution, no, they were in such a bad place that I don't sit there and be like, well, it was Rutgers. They only did it against Rutgers. I look at it and say you had a lot of offensive linemen that started to figure things, some things out. You had a quarterback and wide receivers that were able to get on the same page. You had a running game in Hassan Haskins that came alive. So I think those are all things that they can build on for the rest of the season. And that's what, you know, if I'm looking for some silver lining, looking for some level of excitement, that's where I'm at. I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of let's look ahead to 2021. We've got four games left. But when you look at 2021, and if I'm being honest, I want a new football coach to be running it. When you look at 2021, you now certainly start look at your roster and say, well, you could have a starting quarterback with five starts under his belt. You could have your entire offensive line back. You could have all your running backs, all your wide receivers back. They still have to get coached up, and there's no guarantee that they will, especially if it's Jim Harbaugh coming back to do it. But at the end of the day, there's an opportunity here, as you said, to gain some momentum, to gain some experience, where this team is going to be in a far better position at the end of 2020 going into the offseason than it was just a week, 2 weeks ago. And that's kind of where I'm putting my level of energy and focus, Justin, is just watching those guys continue to develop, or hoping that they continue to develop. I don't want to see a step back. I mean, that's to me, is if you have any regression from here on out until you get to the Ohio State game, you know, that just further underscores that this coaching staff is not the right one, because they've now got some positive momentum and energy and enthusiasm, and they've got to build upon that with their offense. And their defense, yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, when you have a couple injuries and your best scenario is to replace those injured players with walk-ons, I mean, what does that say about, you know, what you've been doing depth-wise and development-wise with the guys you recruited? You know, why is it here that Michigan has had, two sacks in the last 4 weeks? And on this past Saturday, I mean, you know, we still aren't seeing anything from the defensive ends. You take Aiden Hutchinson and Quiddy Pay off the field, I get it. That sucks. It's awful. But where's, like, the next guy coming up? Where's the Elaine Kashama? Where's the next Brandon Graham? Where's the next Tim Jamison? Where's the guy who, you know, he got his opportunity and he got three or four sacks? Josh Uche, who got in there as a backup a couple years ago, and all of a sudden, like, boom, explosive. Guy that can get to the quarterback. Like, they've put those guys in the last couple weeks, and there's just nothing. Like, is it possible that their athleticism along the defensive line is just, like, really, really bad, and that they – don't really show much promise for the future? Like, that's what concerns me, is look along the defensive line right now and tell me who are you building around for 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, there's not much there. I even look at guys like Luigi Villain, who has had a ton of promise, and the guy was supposed to be that next guy but was injury riddled. And so now I thought, okay, he's got his chance. He's healthy, and he still hasn't made a big impact. So Sean Nua, it has to be probably the first guy to go along with Don Brown, because when you look at regression, when you're talking about that, Michigan this year, except for the Minnesota game, has given up a season high to every offense that they've played. So every offense that's come to play against Michigan has put up their season high in yardage and points, which is just a crazy thing to think about when you're talking about the Don Brown defenses of 2016, 17, 18, and all that. And then the other part too is that Don Brown has continually given up more and more yards per game every single year since 2016. So it just doesn't look like we're progressing as a team on the defensive side of the ball. And there's not a whole – I think there's a lot to look forward to in the secondary. I think there are some guys that are improving from week one and week two to now. They have improved, but it doesn't seem like on the front seven even. Cameron Grone and Josh Ross included. Obviously, McGrone went out, but Josh Ross had a good game on Saturday, but up until then, none of those guys had broken out or made any steps of progression throughout the first three games. So that's where I think it's frustrating.
Let me ask you, where's Michael Barrett? Where's Michael Barrett at? I mean, God, this guy was, you know, the best player on the field against Minnesota. And have we seen, like, has he made a play since?
Honestly, I can't think of one. It's just crazy how it was. He was all over the place, and now it's not. Obviously, we've been watching the games, and I haven't, you know, looked at where Michael Barrett is on every single play. But you would have at least thought that we'd see him around the ball in that Viper position when you had Jabril Peppers or even Kalik Hudson. They're around the ball nearly every single play. Right, they probably lead the team in tackles almost every week as well, and we really haven't even seen Michael Barrett around the ball. So a little confused on that, honestly, and it doesn't bode well for how the defense is going. But yeah, I wanted to go back to the offensive side of the ball and specifically to the quarterback position. Obviously, Cade McNamara came in and had a hell of a debut. Well, not a debut, but hell of a game there against Rutgers. And so Jim Harbaugh came out, and of course, in a perfect Jim Harbaugh fashion, said, "I'm not naming a starting quarterback now. We are going to evaluate the two throughout the week." And he also said that they planned on playing both against Rutgers. Cade was at least going to get a series or two, and then he got very hot. I don't want to ask you who do you think is going to start on Saturday, because if it's not Cade McNamara, Harbaugh should be taken off the sideline immediately. But I want to ask you more, what do you think of Jim Harbaugh not going with the hot hand, not at least coming out and saying, yes, Cade McNamara is our guy. He provided a spark. He played really well. He threw the ball well, ran well, led our team well. Instead, he leaves it open. Maybe is it competition to keep Joe Milton in it, or do you think he should, you know, just say, all right, Cade's our guy, we're going with him because we think he's the better quarterback right now?
I think he should do that. Knowing, you know, the way that watching and observing the way that Jim Harbaugh's done things, I think he's worried about announcing that because he doesn't want Joe Milton to lose motivation, to lose desire. He doesn't want Joe Milton to immediately jump in the transfer portal and say, I'm out, when they could use him as a backup for the rest of the year and maybe beyond that. But at some point, like, just look, everybody, you know, so many former players used to tell me that the guys that practice, like, they know, like, they're down there every day. Like, they know who the starting quarterback is. They know who the starting running back is. Like, there's no amount of going to the media and just kind of, you know, hemming and hawing that makes any sense to the guys down the street, because they're aware. Like, right now, they know that that Cade McNamara is the starting quarterback. And We know that Cade McNamara is the starting quarterback. And you know what? Penn State's coaches know that Cade McNamara is the starting quarterback. So what's the harm in saying Cade McNamara has earned the rights to be our starting quarterback? There's none. But Jim just – I mean, this is the same as – no roster, no depth chart, no, you know, this and that. Like, he just loves to play these games because, I don't know, because it's who he is, I guess. And it's silly. It's silly. It's stupid. I mean, there's nothing that he gains from a competitive standpoint by not just saying Cade McNamara's our starting quarterback. Like, Penn State's preparing that way. They're not going to prepare for Joe Milton because there's just really no reason to. I mean, they've watched the film. They're smart enough. They're smarter than members of the media. They're smarter than podcasters. They know who the starting quarterback is. So just go out there and say it. Let your team rally around him all week. Now, I imagine in practice and in locker room, the guys are rallying around him anyway. But, yeah, I just – when you have an opportunity like this and you just kind of like, no, we're gonna see what happens this week in practice. I mean, what's the point of that, Justin? I never understood that. Just – you know, Red Berenson, who coached Michigan hockey for so long, legendary, and he used to open up his practices and everything to the media, made himself available every single day. And I asked him one time, you know, why do you open up your practices? Aren't you worried that, you know, an opposing team could come and just watch what you're doing? And he said, I don't care if they do. He said, if we go out there and take care of our business and play to our potential, nobody's going to beat us. So I don't really worry about what the other team's going to do. I don't really worry about what I say to the media that's going to tip them off. I'm not worried about gaining a competitive advantage by hiding something. I'm going to gain a competitive advantage by preparing my team and recruiting better talent than those guys and just putting a better team on the ice than the other one. And I was like, that's brilliant. That's absolutely brilliant. And I don't know why more coaches don't follow that lead.
Yeah, I think it's just one of those things that Harbaugh, like you said, he's known for, and the coach speak and just his weird little antics. And that to me is kind of what people are sick of, right? It's just like, you know, obviously this, we're nitpicking with this one, but it's we're nitpicking because it's happened so often that now every little thing bothers people and us as the people listening. And so it's just one of those things where it just doesn't make sense to me. Every single person knows that Cade is going to be the guy. So let's give him some confidence, say he's our leader. He's got the locker room behind him and we're ready to go. And obviously, you know what, Joe Milton, you got to be ready too. It's one of those things. You can't just run away from everything if it doesn't go your way. So if a guy wants to transfer because he doesn't get a shot or he gets beat out by somebody, then to me, it's like, so be it. You know what? If that guy wasn't bought in and was just going to run away the first time he faced adversity, we probably don't want that kind of attitude on our team anyway. And I'm not saying Joe Milton is that guy at all. I don't think he is. I think he's going to stick it out. But I'm just saying if that were the case. One thing, too, that I wanted to ask is, do you think that Cade McNamara will keep up? I'm not going to ask you, is he going to, you know, have a 75% completion percentage against every team for the rest of the way? But can he keep up the intensity? Can he keep up the efficiency? Can he keep this team going? Even, you know, making sure that the running backs and the offensive line are working. Obviously, he is within his own person and he can't, you know, do the job for them. But do you think he can lead with the efficiency that he did against Rutgers for the rest of the year?
I think he can, honestly. I mean, you know, I just think it's a personality type that he has what you're looking for in a quarterback. And I, you know, again, someone like Cade McNamara, who doesn't have the arm strength of Joe Milton, who doesn't have the speed and natural athleticism of Joe Milton, you know, for him to go out there and throw for 13,000 yards in Nevada and 146 touchdowns, that's a guy who's never had the physical ability, the high-end physical ability. And so he has spent his entire career figuring it out. And there's something to be said for quarterbacks that have had to compensate for what they lack physically. And I think that's what gives him a shot and gives him a little bit of that swagger and that edge I'm not Joe Milton. I'm not, you know, Shea Patterson even. Like, I've got to do some other things here. And he does those things really well. And we'll have to see how the coaches use him. I mean, the coaches used Joe Milton in a pretty good way in week one and then completely screwed him in week two and changed the game plan and took him out of his comfort zone. So what happens if they do that to Cade McNamara? What if on Saturday they run the ball on first and second down every single, you know, the first quarter series and the first half series and the running game's not there, and all of a sudden you've got you know, Cade McNamara behind the eight ball like Joe Milton was. I mean, that's not going to do anything for his confidence. So, you know, I'm curious to see how these coaches handle Cade McNamara because they didn't handle Joe Milton very well. And to answer to your thing on Joe Milton and whether he would transfer, again, I don't think he doesn't give off the type of personality like that. I mean, that is kind of the norm in college football nowadays. But if I was Joe Milton and I looked at this earnestly, I wouldn't be afraid of the competition. I would look and go, man, my coaches didn't really help me out for the 5 starts I made. And I don't feel like I've really developed great. Maybe I want to go someplace else just because I think there's a coaching staff that can be better for me than these guys were. That's what would motivate me if I decided to transfer. I mean, look, I don't have confidence that this coaching staff is going to get the best out of its players consistently. And I think that's what happened with Joe Milton. And I'm really curious to see, and we'll talk more about this on Friday in our Friday podcast, is if they take a step forward with Cade McNamara or if they take a step back and get in his way as they often do when they seem to have something working. Wilton Spade in 2016, Shea Patterson in 2018. They finally get something going, and then they seemingly handcuff their quarterback. So I don't want to see that going forward.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you a little bit, too, about the coaching staff and the play calling in the second half versus Rutgers, because you touched on it there. It looked different. You thought that they were handcuffing Joe Milton, but then they opened it up a little bit for Cade McNamara, and they weren't running the ball on first down. But then their running game really got going, especially into the overtimes. How different did you see the play calling from the first half to the second half and then into the overtimes? And how much is the spark that Cade McNamara brings in, how much does that affect the offensive line and how confident they are in the run game? Really, because I think a lot of people are out there asking, you know, Cade, he did well in the passing game, obviously, but the run game hadn't worked for 3 weeks, and then all of a sudden he comes in and the run game works, and so people are saying, oh, are these offensive linemen blocking harder for him? Are the running backs running harder for him? I want to ask you kind of what's your take on all that, if it really is the spark, if it was play calling, if there's some other factors in that.
Well, I think they, you know, they certainly ran some more RPOs with Cade McNamara than they do with Joe Milton and his ability to execute. But, you know, when you have the ability to go downfield, when you have the ability to give defenses, you know, other looks, it really just opens up a lot of things for the running game. And then the second part, you know, beyond just the different looks that you give, is Justin, I've heard from so many former players that, yes, when there's a quarterback that provides a spark, what all these guys need is there's so much going on in their brains. They need to be able to focus. They need to be able to be locked in. And when you've got some confidence, when you've got some offensive confidence and you're playing well, and all of a sudden it's the series gets extended by your quarterback with his arm, and now you've got you instead of going, you know, three and out, you're at five plays, you're at six plays, you're at seven plays. You start to get into that zone as an offensive lineman, as a wide receiver, and now you're realizing your best. You know, all of a sudden, like, you're coming off the ball with more aggressiveness. You're coming off the ball more focused. You know where the guy is that you need to hit. You know what you're coming off with the proper technique because you've got that laser energy that is part of it. And so I think a quarterback makes everybody better around him. I mean, that's why they talk about the great leaders. That's why they talk about, you know, Tom Brady going down to Tampa Bay and all of a sudden Tampa Bay is a good team. Russell Wilson in Seattle gets so much credit all the time for his leadership. When you are that type of personality, the guys around you play their best football. And I think that's what we saw against Rutgers last week with Cade McNamara. I hope that's what we see with Penn State. Michigan Penn State on Saturday, and we will talk much more about it in our Friday podcast as we look ahead, offer our predictions, maybe get back to our MVPs, Justin, talk about the upcoming weekend in college football. It should be a lot of fun. I love this week of football, and even though my team is not playing the way I want them to, I'm going to try to enjoy this week of football as many games as possible. So I hope everybody does too. So Justin, I hope you have a great Thanksgiving. I wish you the very best, you and Jacqueline. I know you guys, you know, dealing with some COVID stuff. And so I hope that you guys, just have a great Thanksgiving. Yeah, we'll come back and talk to you on Friday.
Sounds good, Mike. You as well. I hope you and the family are safe and enjoy some, turkey. What's your favorite, dish on Thanksgiving?
I'm a mashed potatoes, man. Ooh. I mean, you give me mashed potatoes with gravy. That's my jam. That's probably the thing I automatically get seconds of. But I love everything about Thanksgiving. Like, I love the food for Thanksgiving. Turkey, the brown meat, you know, give me a drumstick, mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, stuffing, everything. I'm definitely going to have seconds. I'm going to get myself a very good long, I'm running a 10K, a turkey trot on Thanksgiving Day just so I can get out there and eat as much as I want.
Nice, nice. Burn up those calories before you stuff your face. I'm just waiting for the pie at the end. That's what I'm looking forward to. So, good luck, or not good luck, but I hope everybody has a good Thanksgiving out there as well. Enjoy your friends and family. Stay safe with COVID, obviously, and be respectful and careful of everybody around you. You will find us. You can find us on Twitter at Stadium Main Pod. I am at Justin Rowe 92 and Mike is at Michael Spath ITH. And then we will see you all after Thanksgiving on Friday.
This is the Stadium and Main podcast presented by Kapnick Insurance Group, Wolverine State Brewing Company, and Lewis Jewelers.